Echoes from the Cellar by Meredith Graves. Copyright GPI 2024. Table of Contents. Chapter 1, The Locked Door. Chapter 2, Scratches in the Walls. Chapter 3, A Voice Beneath 4. Chapter 4, The Recordings 5. Chapter 5, Memory Loops. Chapter 6, The Watcher. Chapter 7, Night of Knocks. Chapter 8, The Room with No Reflection. 9. Chapter 9, The Candle That Wouldn't Burn Out. 10. Chapter 10, Her Name Was Anna. Chapter 1, The Locked Door. The house had always been quiet, but not in the way most houses are. It wasn't the comforting silence of nightfall or the peaceful hush after a snowfall. This silence was heavy, as if something within the walls was holding its breath. Anna Bishop stood in the narrow hallway, staring at the cellar door. The wood was warped with age, its paint chipped and faded to a sickly gray. It had no knob, just a rusted keyhole and 6 horizontal gashes at shoulder height, as if something had clawed at it once, long ago. She didn't remember that detail. She wasn't sure if the scratches had always been there, or if they'd appeared since her return. Maybe they'd been waiting for her to notice. Anna hadn't stepped foot in this house in nearly 15 years. Her grandmother's death had brought her back, a solitary funeral, a rushed inheritance, and the sudden ownership of the place she had run from as a child. But the house hadn't forgotten her. It still creaked the same way. The floor still groaned under her weight, like it disliked being disturbed. The cellar door groaned too, not from opening. It never opened. But sometimes at night, she swore she heard it shift, just a little, as if leaning toward her when she wasn't looking. She turned away. The upstairs bedroom was as she remembered, lace curtains, an old vanity mirror cracked down the middle, and a shelf of porcelain dolls that seemed to reposition themselves when she wasn't looking. She'd boxed up half the house already, but this room unsettled her more than the rest. She sat at the vanity, brushing her hair in the fractured glass. The crack cut her reflection clean in half. "You were never welcome here," she whispered to her own image, not even sure why. A floorboard creaked behind her. She turned, nothing. No breeze, no draft, just the same stiff air and that scent of old cedar and rot. She looked back at the mirror. Her reflection hadn't turned. It still faced forward, still staring at the cellar door in the memory behind her. That night, Anna couldn't sleep. Rain had begun around midnight, tapping the windows gently, then harder. She lay awake in bed, covers tight around her, eyes locked on the ceiling. At 3:17 a.m., the tapping changed. It wasn't on the window. It was coming from below. 3 slow knocks. She didn't move. Her breath caught in her throat. The silence returned, that thick, wet silence that filled the walls like mold. She waited. 10 minutes passed, then 20. She convinced herself it was the rain. It had to be. But when she rose the next morning and passed the cellar door, she found 3 new marks in the dust across its surface. Finger length, parallel, fresh. She didn't eat breakfast. Anna spent the day cleaning the front room. She found letters tucked behind a cabinet drawer, old yellowed envelopes from her grandmother, never sent. Most were addressed to M.E., a name Anna didn't recognize. One letter was dated the year Anna left. It read, "They think I don't hear it, but I do. Every night it calls from the below place. I see him in the mirror now, even during the day. I pray he hasn't followed you. I pray he stays in the dark. But it's hungry now. He is hungry. And I am old." The signature was smudged, as if her grandmother's hand had trembled near the end. Anna folded the letter and didn't read the rest. That night she locked her bedroom door. And still, at 3:17, she heard the knocks again. This time, 4. Each knock seemed closer, heavier, as if something was remembering how to climb. The fourth night brought no rain, no wind. The silence returned with sharper edges. Anna stayed downstairs longer than usual, trying to convince herself she wasn't afraid. She cleaned out the pantry, rearranged furniture, even turned on the dusty old radio in the den. Static. Every station, except one. On 103.9, a voice whispered. She opened it once. It doesn't shut the same. Anna froze. The voice was raspy, thin, not male, not female. Something in between, like a breath that had learned speech. Then static returned. No voice, no signal. She unplugged the radio and didn't plug it back in. That night, the knocking came at 3:17 a.m. again. Five knocks, a pause, then a sixth, louder, accompanied by a dragging sound like nails on cement. She lay in bed, paralyzed. The house groaned around her, each wall flexing inward like breath. Her breath, its breath. The next morning, Anna finally checked the cellar, not opened, just inspected. She crouched in front of the door and studied the edges. The frame was old but intact, but something was wrong with the air, colder than the rest of the house, damp, like the door was sweating. She knocked. Once. Silence. Then, as she rose to leave, something on the floor caught her eye. A small object that hadn't been there before. An iron key, old and blackened, lying perfectly aligned with the cellar's edge. She didn't pick it up. That afternoon, she went to town for the first time since arriving. The grocery clerk, an older woman with a crooked jaw and sharp eyes, recognized her immediately. "Bishop girl," she said flatly. "Didn't expect you to come back." Anna tried to smile. "Just settling the estate." You staying at the house? For now? The woman hesitated, then leaned closer. "If it starts talking to you, leave. Don't argue. Just leave."
"Excuse me?"
"That house had watchers before you. It remembers them. They don't all leave." She didn't elaborate. She rang up Anna's items in silence. On the receipt, scribbled in faint pencil between printed lines, was one word. Listen. Anna dreamed that night. For the first time in years, she stood in the hallway, staring at the cellar door. The scratches were fresh, still bleeding. A voice behind the door whispered her name over and over. When she turned to run, every door upstairs slammed shut at once. She woke with a scream lodged in her throat. 3:17 a.m. Six knocks this time. Then silence. The next morning, Anna walked through the house differently, slower, more aware of every board beneath her. The silence wasn't silent anymore. It clicked. It breathed. Sometimes it whispered, just at the edge of sound. In the study, she found an old box of reel-to-reel tapes. Her grandmother's handwriting marked them all. Cellar. 1978. There were over 20 reels, each labeled with a date. She didn't have a player, but she found one, an ancient unit in the attic, dusty and stubborn, but still functional. She loaded the first tape. It crackled, hissed, and then played. Footsteps, silence, breathing, then a voice, her grandmother's, whispering. "Still down there, can hear him. Talking again. Says he's cold. Says he remembers me now." Anna's heart pounded. The tape hissed. Then came a noise she didn't expect. A voice replied. It was deep, crooked, like a throat trying to form words after decades of disuse. "Let me up. You left me. You closed the door." Anna ejected the tape. She didn't listen to another one that day. That night, she did not sleep. She sat in the hallway outside the cellar door, holding the iron key in her hand. She hadn't meant to bring it upstairs. Somehow, it was already in her pocket. The hallway lights flickered, once, then again. And then she heard it. Not knocks, not dragging, a voice, whispering, from behind the cellar door, speaking in a rhythm she recognized, her name. "Anna, Anna, Anna, She backed away slowly, but her foot caught on something. The rug? A warped floorboard? She stumbled, hit the wall, and the key clattered to the ground and slid directly under the cellar door. She didn't try to retrieve it. In the morning, Anna searched the house for answers. She found a hidden drawer in her grandmother's wardrobe, a journal inside. Its pages were stained, many illegible, but one entry stood out clearly. "He's not what I thought. He's not human anymore. Maybe never was. He's older than this house. Older than memory. He wears the faces of those we love. That's how he gets in." Anna closed the book. She stared at her reflection in the cracked mirror. Her own face felt wrong, as if someone else was trying it on. She whispered to herself, "You are Anna Bishop. You are awake." Her reflection did not move its lips. That night, the knocking didn't come. The house was completely still, until 3:17 a.m. Then the doorknob turned, the cellar door creaked open half an inch, and a voice, no longer whispering, said clearly, "You forgot me." The next morning, Anna walked through the house differently, slower, more aware of every board beneath her. The silence wasn't silent anymore. It clicked. It breathed. Sometimes it whispered, just at the edge of sound. She hadn't picked up the key. Not yet. But it hadn't moved either. It remained beside the cellar door like a suggestion made flesh. While cleaning the attic, she found something strange. A photograph she didn't recognize. It was a faded Polaroid curled with age, showing the basement staircase, open, lit, but entirely empty. She turned it over. In the corner, written in trembling ink, "Not empty." That night she placed the photo beside her bed, unsure why. She left her bedroom door unlocked. She needed to know something. And part of her believed the house would tell her if she asked right. At 3:17 a.m., the knocks came again. 6, then silence. She waited, staring at the ceiling. Then a seventh knock. Then a whisper. It was inside the room. "Anna," she sat up. Nothing moved. The closet door stood open. She hadn't left it that way. The window was still locked. And on the floor, at the foot of her bed, lay the iron key. She didn't scream. She picked it up. The next day, Anna called the local historical society. A man named Marcus answered, polite, curious, and oddly familiar with her grandmother's name. "Yes," he said slowly. "I've read her notes. Eleanora Bishop, yes? She was one of the last living members of the Gate Circle." "The what?" Anna asked. "A private group, local folklore preservationists, paranormal researchers too, if you believe that sort of thing. Your house was cataloged in their black list." "Why?" "Because of the door." Silence stretched between them. "They said it was a thinning place, a location where memory leaks into the physical world. Sometimes, something from beneath remembers being shut away. Sometimes it tries to come back through." "What happens if the door opens?" Anna asked. "No one who opened it ever wrote anything again." Anna didn't sleep that night. She placed the key on the kitchen table and sat in the dark. At 3:17 a.m., the walls seemed to inhale. The knocking didn't come. This time, the sound was a click. The door had unlocked. She rose, slowly, quietly. The air was cold, heavy. Her breath fogged even indoors. She stepped into the hallway and turned toward the cellar. The door stood slightly open. She reached out. The wood was warm, not hot, not burning, just pulsing like skin. She pushed it inward. The cellar was dark, not pitch black, a strange watery dark that shimmered like oil. Wooden stairs descended into nothing. "Hello?" she whispered. There was no echo, only breath. She stepped onto the first stair, then the second. With each step, her memories twisted. Not lost, just wrong. The hallway she'd just exited now smelled like oranges. Her grandmother's voice echoed faintly, but she couldn't remember her face. She took another step. The light above her flickered. Then, from below, something spoke. "We kept it for you." She froze. The voice was neither kind nor cruel. It was old. Older than her family. Older than the house. It didn't want to hurt her. It wanted her to join. She turned to run, but the door had shut. There was no keyhole on this side. Then she heard the sound she hadn't heard since childhood. A small, childish giggle, echoing just below the third step. "Anna," it said. She took one more step down, and the door vanished. Chapter 2. Scratches in the Walls. Anna woke on the stairs, curled like a child. Her head throbbed, her mouth tasted of copper. The cellar door stood ajar behind her, light from the hallway spilling in like it hadn't moved at all. She scrambled upward and slammed the door shut, the key still clenched in her fist. She locked it, then locked it again. She didn't remember coming back up. She didn't remember falling asleep, but her feet were caked in dust, and her nightgown smelled like wet dirt. She sat against the door for a long time, staring into nothing, listening to the wood groan behind her. The whisper she heard wasn't loud. It was written into the silence. "You came back." The house had changed. She felt it immediately. The hallway wallpaper, yellowed and cracked, now bore something new. Scratches. Long, deep, uneven gashes that hadn't been there before. They curved upward like claws dragged by something crawling, or something held too tightly for too long. She ran her fingers over them. Fresh, still flaking bits of paint and wood. They hadn't been done in a dream. They were real, and they were spreading. One section near the stairs peeled open slightly. She leaned in and saw something within the crack. Not insulation. Paper, a scrap of a drawing folded and shoved behind the wall. She pulled it free. It was a child's sketch. Crayon on torn notebook paper. A stick figure woman crying beside a door. The figure had no eyes. Above her head was a word scrawled backwards. "Remember." Anna dropped the paper. She searched the walls all day. Dozens of scratches ran through the hall, some reaching the second floor. She peeled back wallpaper, poked behind shelves, even pulled up a corner of the floorboards in the parlor. She found more drawings, each one worse than the last. A child's face, smiling with too many teeth. A stairwell wrapped in black vines that bled. A figure labeled M.E., drawn with one hand raised and five fingers too many. She found a voice recorder too, her grandmother's. It still worked. She pressed play, static. Then the soft rasp of her grandmother's voice. Second scratch. It reached the mirror. Can't look in. Third night. Tapping inside the walls. It learns voices. Mine now. Sometimes it says things I didn't say yet, but I hear them later. I think it's writing me. Anna stopped the tape. She rewound. Played it again. This time the tape was blank. That night, she barricaded the cellar with furniture, shelves, a dresser, even her old twin bed frame. But she knew it wouldn't matter. At 3:17 a.m., she heard something inside the walls. Not knocking, not whispering. Scratching, slow, purposeful. As if something was spelling her name. She didn't sleep. Anna didn't sleep. Not that she didn't try. Her body begged for rest. But every time her eyes closed, she heard it. The sound of fingernails on plaster. The shift of weight inside the wall, the groan of beams bending without cause. At dawn, she found something new scratched beneath the mirror in the upstairs hallway. "You left the door open." She ran to the cellar, still locked, still barricaded. But one of the wooden slats on the bed frame had splintered from the inside. She stepped back, then noticed the dust on the floor had shifted. Drag marks. As if something had crawled to the edge of the threshold and stopped. She rechecked the iron key, cold, but not unmoving. It pulsed once in her palm like a dying heartbeat. She called Marcus again, the man from the Historical Society. I found drawings, writings. The name M.E. shows up everywhere. Silence on the other end.
Marcus?
He sighed. Meredith Elswin. She lived in the house before your grandmother. Disappeared in 1947. No note. No signs. Just gone. The only thing left behind was a child's handprint inside the cellar. Burned into the wall.
A child's handprint?
Too small to be hers. Too large to be unborn. Then he added, there's a rumor she opened the door and it never really closed. Just waited for someone to remember. That night, Anna covered every mirror in the house. She left the lights on. She didn't record anything. She barely breathed. At 3:17 a.m., she stood in the hallway, back to the wall, the key in her hand. The scratching began, but not from the cellar. From the ceiling. She looked up just in time to see a crack appear in the paint, thin, deliberate, then another, and then from the corner, a pale hand slipped downward, not falling, not stretching, just sliding into reality like it had never left. It gripped the molding, then pulled itself back inside. She screamed for the first time since returning to the house, and it echoed back from the walls. The following morning, Anna didn't speak, not to herself, not to the house. She walked from room to room with a hammer in one hand and a crowbar in the other. She picked a wall, the one near the upstairs stairwell, and pried it open. Inside, nothing but studs and dust. She moved to the hallway wall, tore open another section. Her fingers bled, still nothing, until the third hole. There, behind the wallpaper and cracked plaster, lay something hidden. A small wooden panel. Carved into it was a single symbol. A spiral etched into a burned circle. She touched it, and the panel fell inward. Behind it, a hollow space. Narrow. Barely large enough to crawl through. But inside, tucked into the back, was a notebook. Its pages were brittle, the ink half faded. But the writing was unmistakable. It was her own. Not her grandmother's, not Meredith's. Heron written in a childish scrawl. He told me not to tell, but the wall said he's still hungry. If I tell, he stops. If I tell, he's gone, but I forget again. He makes me forget. Anna staggered backward. The air turned to ice. Something moved in the space behind the panel. Just a breath. Just a whisper of motion. She slammed the wall shut. She remembered now, not just the house, the game, the ritual, the voice in the vent. She had spoken to it once as a child, let it name itself in her ear, and she had fed it. Something. That night she returned to the hallway. No barricade, no recorder, no tools, only the key. She stood in front of the cellar door and whispered aloud, I remember. The house groaned, the walls flexed, the scratching stopped. Then, from behind the door, good, then I can finish. The door clicked open, and Anna stepped through, not because she was brave, but because it was time. She closed the door behind her, and the walls went silent. Chapter 3. A Voice Beneath. The door shut behind her with a sound that was too soft, a hush, not a thud, as if the house was drawing a breath rather than ending one. Anna stood at the top of the cellar stairs. Wooden steps stretched into the dark below. No light switch, no windows, just the scent of wet stone and mold and something older, like forgotten wood or breath caught in throat. She held the key in her palm. It had no glow now, just cold metal and weight. She stepped down, one stair at a time. The deeper she descended, the less her body felt real. Her arms tingled. Her footsteps made no echo. By the sixth step, her breath didn't fog the air. By the eighth, the air no longer moved at all. Then her foot touched stone, uneven, slick, ancient. The cellar widened into a chamber that was not the one she remembered. No boxes, no broken shelves, no wine racks, just a circular room cut directly into bedrock. A single beam of light fell through a crack above her, cutting through the dark like a blade. In the center, something moved. A figure curled into itself, kneeling, breathing. Anna didn't speak. She didn't run. She listened, and the voice came.
"You left me here."
It wasn't a whisper. It was inside her head, vibrating along the bones behind her eyes. The figure didn't lift its head, but its presence filled the space like steam, like memory.
"You came back, but not the same."
Anna stepped forward, one hand brushing the wall. The stone was damp, not with water, but warmth, like skin.
"Who are you?"
she asked aloud.
"You called me first. You named me first. You fed me first."
"I don't remember."
"Yes, you do."
The figure raised its head. It had no face, just a smooth, stretched surface like paper soaked in tears. But where eyes should have been, there were finger-shaped impressions pressing outward, as if someone were trapped inside, begging to see.
"You made me real, and then you buried me."
Anna trembled.
"I was a child.
You were mine." It rose slowly, its joints cracking like rotting branches. It stood taller than her, thin and trembling. Its shadow touched all corners of the room at once. Then it took a step forward, and the stone beneath her cracked, and Anna remembered a rhyme, one she hadn't thought of since age 7. "Count the cracks, but don't make 10, or else it crawls the wall again. Don't breathe its name, don't let it see. It speaks in you and speaks through me." She backed away, but the cracks were already forming. 1, 2, 3. She ran. Anna burst up the stairs. The cellar door flung open before she even touched it. She didn't remember unlocking it. She didn't remember running, but suddenly she was in the hallway gasping, her legs shaking beneath her. The house was silent. Still, but wrong. All the lights had gone out. Every mirror she had covered was uncovered again, and the scratches on the walls. They had multiplied. They no longer followed the floorboards. Now they twisted up around door frames, carved into the ceiling corners like wild vines, chaotic and crawling. Her name was written 6 times across the hall wall, each one more frantic than the last. She stumbled backward, heart thudding. Then the phone rang. Anna stared at it, a cold beige relic on the kitchen wall. It hadn't worked in years, but now it rang, loud and clear, like it had never stopped. She picked it up. "Hello?" Silence. Then a child's voice, soft and cracked like an old tape. "You forgot me." Click. She dropped the receiver. It bounced off the floor, still humming a dial tone that felt more like static than signal. She rushed to the attic, gripping her grandmother's notebook like a lifeline. Pages fluttered in her hand as she scanned for anything that matched what she saw in the cellar. Finally, in the middle of the book, a single page with a hand-drawn circle, the spiral sigil again, encased in rough charcoal lines. Beneath it, "If you hear it speak in your own voice, you waited too long." She closed the book, breathing hard. It had spoken in her voice once. In a dream, she thought. Now she wasn't sure. It was all blending. The past felt like the present. Memories she thought were nightmares now returned as fact. She remembered the door opening when she was young. A game, a dare, whispering, a gift left behind in the dark, her favorite doll. And then, nothing. Just silence. Until now. That night, Anna lit candles in every room and played recordings of white noise from her phone. It didn't stop the sound, but it blurred it. It made the walls seem less focused, the whispers less sharp. At 3:17 a.m., the lights flickered. One by one, the candles extinguished, not blown out, but pinched shut, their wax snuffed between invisible fingers. Then she heard it. Her own voice from the mirror behind her. "I'm still down here." She turned and saw her reflection smiling. Not scared, not shaking, smiling with too many teeth. Anna collapsed into the hallway,
the mirror still buzzing in her ears. Her reflection, that wrong smile, was gone now. But the afterimage clung to her mind like smoke. It had been her, but it hadn't. Not quite. She crawled toward the front door, locked. Every window nailed shut. The exit was there, yes, but the house didn't care. It had made itself her shape, her sound. It didn't need to trap her anymore. It just needed her to stay long enough. She found herself whispering again. I didn't forget you. I was made to forget. The house creaked, a sound of shifting weight. Then came a reply, this time in the air itself. You promised to keep me. But you left me down there, in the cold. I didn't know. You do now. She fled back to the attic, where something always seemed less present. The far corner had been the safest place in her memory, filled with dust and the smell of old cedar. She sat there, arms around her knees, rocking slowly, staring at the locked chest her grandmother had forbidden her to open. She opened it. Inside, photographs, drawings, a baby's bonnet, stained dark, a child's tooth wrapped in cloth, and a small cassette labeled Anna, age 7. She dug out the recorder and pressed play. Her voice came through young and bright. I met him. He's not scary. He said he'd stay forever, but only if I feed him something that remembers. Then, more quietly, I gave him the part of me that cries. Anna shut off the tape. She couldn't breathe. Her chest heaved. Her hands went numb. What did I do? She whispered. And from behind her, the mirror said, You made me you. She left the attic and returned to the hallway, no longer hiding. The house no longer tried to stop her. It opened for her. Lights clicked on as she passed, floorboards quieted underfoot. It was ready now. The cellar door stood open. Inside, a figure waited. But this time, it looked just like her. Same face, same hair, same clothes. Only the smile was wrong, stretched too wide, as if trying to hold all the grief she'd ever buried. It tilted its head and spoke. We were never meant to be apart. Anna stepped forward. Then what do you want? To finish remembering. Anna descended the stairs, her other self waiting at the bottom. They mirrored each other's steps. The air was thick with the scent of soil and firewood, as if time had collapsed inward and remade this room into something half forgotten. The cellar had changed again, no longer stone, but layered in reflections, polished walls that rippled with memory. Every step Anna took shimmered behind her as though the house itself was watching, or recording. You were supposed to keep me, the voice said. You left the part that remembered how to feel. Anna stood before her double, not a ghost, not a monster, just a reflection of who she had been before the forgetting, before the door, before the voice. You begged me to close it, Anna said. I did what I thought was right. The double tilted its head. You buried me. I was 7. You were strong. Anna's hands trembled. She took one more step. So what now? You want me to remember everything? Be you again? The voice, her voice, softened. I want to be let in. It held out its hand. Skin pale, veins dark, fingers long and unfamiliar. Not monstrous, just forgotten. If I take your hand, what happens? You stop pretending. I stop scratching. We become one again. Anna's breath caught. She remembered every night she hadn't cried. Every time she buried pain instead of speaking it. Every moment she felt nothing when she should have screamed. This part of her, this voice beneath, hadn't been evil. It had just been abandoned. She took its hand. The room shattered. Light poured through the cracks. The walls folded inward, not collapsing, but merging. She felt herself reel, not fall, and then land. Back in the hallway. Everything was quiet. The cellar door was shut. But this time, it didn't hum with breath or claw at the edges of her mind. It was just a door. She looked into the mirror beside it. Her reflection looked back, whole, still afraid, but no longer alone. Anna stayed in the house that night. The scratching didn't come. The lights didn't flicker. The mirrors reflected only what they should. She slept without waking at 3:17. And when morning came, she walked to the cellar one last time. She pressed her palm to the door and whispered, "I remember you." No voice answered, and for the first time, she was okay with that. Chapter 4. The Recordings. Anna sat cross-legged on the floor, surrounded by a dozen dusty cassette tapes. Each one was unlabeled except for a faint smear of red wax or a scrawl in trembling ink, numbers, dates, or just initials, M-E, E-B, A-B. Some of them were her grandmother's, some weren't. She'd found them hidden in a crawl space behind the bedroom closet wall, wrapped in plastic, stacked like bricks in a loose wooden crate. Alongside them, a recorder with a cracked speaker, half a spool of blank tape, and an old envelope. The envelope was sealed. On the front, in clean block letters, "Do not listen alone." She opened it anyway. Inside, a note in her grandmother's hand. "They speak in loops, but not all loops close. Some bleed forward. If you hear yourself, stop. If you hear me, listen. If you hear the child, leave." Anna loaded the first tape. The spools groaned. She pressed play. Static. Then a voice. "October 9th. It came through again. Not physically, not yet. But the mirror flashed white and I heard the knock. Even though the door was open. That's worse. It wants the door open. It wants the sound of us watching." Click. She rewound and listened again. This time, the voice wasn't her grandmother's, it was her own. "October 9th. Same tone, same cadence, but she'd never said those words in her life. She hit stop. Her heart thudded in her chest. She reached for another tape, one marked only with a red spiral. She pressed play. She left the cellar, but not the house. It remembered her. It fed her back into the walls. "She's speaking now, through the things she never said." Anna recognized the voice. It was the one from her childhood dreams. Later that evening, she began pinning the photographs she found to the wall above the recorder. Some were her grandmother. Others were strangers. One was of herself at age 6, sitting in the garden, smiling. But in the upper window behind her, someone stood in the attic. She flipped the photo over. On the back, a recording date, 3:17 a.m. She found the matching tape, pressed play, and heard the attic door creak open from inside her walls. Anna waited until dusk before playing the third tape, the one marked only with her initials, a B. The label looked decades old, faded, and smeared. But she knew, without doubt, she had never made this recording. She pressed play. At first, silence, then static, then her own voice, older, strained, as if recorded under duress. "If you're hearing this, I'm already inside." Anna froze. "You came back too soon, or maybe too late. I left the loop open. He used it. I used it." A pause. "Don't listen to the fifth tape. That's where he waits. That's where you forget." Click. The tape ended. Anna stared at the recorder, hand trembling. The voice had been hers, unmistakably hers, but aged, layered with exhaustion. A future? A memory she hadn't made yet? Or just another loop? She found the fifth tape. She didn't play it. Instead, she listened to one marked M-E. The voice was unfamiliar, soft, careful, broken. "He followed me into my own breath. He speaks through furniture now, through the way my body moves in the dark. When I try to leave the house, my knees forget how to bend. When I try to sleep, he sings to me in my voice. His favorite song is the one I don't know I'm humming." Anna stopped the tape and realized she had been humming. That same tuneless string of notes she'd murmured for days, since returning. She tried to remember where it came from. She couldn't. Later that night, she unrolled a blank cassette from the box and began recording. Her own message. Her own voice. My name is Anna Bishop. I am in the house on Bramble Hollow. The cellar was opened. The voice is speaking again. If I am not me when you hear this, do not let me in. She labeled the tape, then placed it in the wall behind the mirror, just in case someone else, or another version of herself, needed it later. From the hallway, a whisper echoed. You finally learned. She should have burned it. The fifth tape sat at the edge of the desk like an unblinking eye. Its label was blank, its shell was cracked, but it was warm, unnaturally so, like it had been recording itself, waiting. At midnight, Anna pressed play. Nothing at first, just static. Then the sound shifted. Low hum, a pulse, a heartbeat, not hers. Then came a voice, not hers, not her grandmother's. Something between. You gave me your name once. You wore mine like a mask. Her head ached, her jaw clenched. Now you forget your own face. That's how I stay. Suddenly, the air in the room dropped 10 degrees. The recorder sparked. The mirror cracked. Anna felt something tug, not at her skin, but at her outline. She grabbed the tape, ejected it, but the sound continued. You called me. You kept me. You let me speak in your voice. You said I could stay if I hid in the quiet. The tape spun without power. The recorder was unplugged. Her reflection smiled again. This time, she wasn't smiling. Anna ran to the mirror and shouted, You're not me! The reflection's mouth moved in sync, but the eyes didn't blink, didn't match. It whispered, Then who are you? And Anna couldn't answer. She smashed the mirror. Glass fell like frozen water, and with it, her name. For a moment, just a breath, she forgot who she was. Then the tape clicked off, and Anna breathed in like it was the first time. Morning light didn't bring clarity, only dust and silence. Anna swept up the mirror shards carefully, wincing every time she saw her face reflected in a broken piece, uncertain if it was really hers. She taped over the cracked frame with black cloth and turned the mirror to the wall. Then she burned the fifth tape. The plastic curled and hissed like something alive. For a moment, she heard it scream, not through her ears, but in her jaw, her teeth, her spine. The sound crawled through her. Then it was gone, or so she thought. Later that afternoon, she opened the envelope again, the one marked, Do Not Listen Alone. Inside the flap, scrawled in faded ink, a second message had appeared, one she swore hadn't been there before. You listened alone. She laughed, but the sound came out wrong, like a recording played backwards. She returned to the crawl space and removed all remaining tapes. One by one, she recorded over them. White noise, radio static, her own heartbeat. Anything to bury the past, anything to reclaim her voice. When she reached the final tape, a blank reel, she paused. Then she recorded a new message. This house remembers voices. If you find this, leave it. Don't listen, don't ask questions, don't bring it with you. It's not about what you hear, it's what hears you back. She placed the tape under the floorboards with a ribbon of her hair tied around it. Then she sealed the crate, then the crawl space. At 3:17 a.m., the hallway was still, the mirror was silent. The recorder unplugged, and yet, faintly, beneath the floorboards, the spools turned. One last whisper escaped the static. Play me again. Chapter 5. Memory Loops. The day began the same as the one before. Same light through the stained window, same faint smell of iron in the hall. But Anna knew something had shifted. She picked up her phone, no new calls, but her call history showed she'd dialed a number she didn't recognize at 2:42 a.m. She checked her voice memos, three new recordings, all from last night. None started by her. The first played a child's laughter, hers, followed by her own voice whispering, "If I forget again, tell her not to wait by the door." She stopped it, played the second. It was a conversation, her own voice, but responding to silence, like someone had erased the other half. "No, I didn't go down there again." Pause. "I know what happens when I do." Click. The third was just a loop, her breathing, slowed, distorted, then reversed. She deleted all three, then emptied the trash, then removed the SD card and burned it in the fireplace. The flames curled around it without smoke. The card crumbled into ash, and from the parlor wall, a voice whispered, "Now you've done it twice." She walked to the hallway, the long one near the east wall, and froze. The paintings had changed. Where once her grandmother's portraits hung, now there were 10 identical frames. Each held a variation of her, Anna standing in profile, Anna asleep in the cellar, Anna holding the iron key to her forehead, eyes closed like in prayer. Each one was signed AB. She stepped closer. Her breath fogged the glass, not from her mouth, but from inside the frame. "I'm remembering," she said aloud. The hallway clock struck 3:17 p.m., and for a brief moment she heard knocking from above. The door to the study opened by itself. Anna didn't hesitate. Something in her had given up on running, not out of defeat, but out of understanding. The house didn't want her gone. It wanted her to see. Inside, everything was covered in sheets, the desk, the shelves, the old armchair by the fireplace. But the air was fresh, as if someone had been using the room recently. She stepped to the desk and peeled back the cover. Beneath it, a photograph she didn't remember ever being taken. Her, age 14, sitting in this very room with her head in her hands. Her eyes were shut. But in the reflection of the desk's glass surface, her mouth was open, speaking. She turned the photo over, written on the back. "You knew then." She sat in the chair and the air around her thickened, not with heat, but weight. She blinked and the walls changed. She was no longer alone. The room was brighter, filled with morning light. Her younger self sat across from her, the same pose, the same closed eyes. Only this time, the younger Anna raised her head and looked directly at her. "You're back," the younger version said, voice steady. "What is this?" Anna whispered. "The place you put me, the loop you made. Why?" Younger Anna smiled sadly. "Because you thought forgetting would protect you." "Did it?" "No." The desk drawer creaked open between them. Inside, a journal. Leather-bound, worn, and cracked at the spine. Anna reached for it. So did her younger self. They touched it at the same time. The room went dark, and the loop began. She was six, standing at the top of the cellar steps, the door open, the voice below calling her name. She descended. She was 11, screaming in her sleep. Her grandmother holding her, the window open, the mirror whispering. She was 15, burning drawings she didn't remember making, teeth in the fireplace, a voice on the radio counting backwards from 9. She was 29, back again, looping, erasing, beginning, remembering. "Stop!" she shouted, and the loop snapped. She was back in the chair, alone. The photo was gone, the journal remained. She opened it and saw the first line. "Let this be the last version." The pages were old, but the ink was fresh. Anna flipped through the journal, expecting blank parchment or her grandmother's neat cursive. Instead, she found her own handwriting, slightly slanted, letters sharp with haste. The first entry read, "If you're reading this, it means the loop hasn't closed yet. Don't listen to the mirrors, don't follow the voice below. And when he says your name in your voice, that's the moment he remembers who you are." Anna's chest tightened. She flipped to another page halfway through. The ink there was smudged, water damaged. Still, a few words emerged clearly. "Third floor window, You dropped something. It kept the memory from looping. She didn't remember ever writing this. She didn't remember a third floor. Yet her feet were already moving. There was a third floor. Barely a room. More of a converted attic with a sloped ceiling and a single boarded-up window. She hadn't noticed it before. Maybe it hadn't been there before. She climbed the stairs, heart racing. Dust curled in the air like breath. At the top, a tiny hallway led to the window mentioned in the journal, and on the floor beneath it, a hair ribbon, heron from childhood, faded lavender. She knelt and picked it up. A rush of air passed through her. Suddenly, the house blurred. She stood in three places at once, herself now, herself at six, and herself standing at the cellar door with the ribbon in hand, whispering to someone behind it. Then it snapped back. She was alone again. But the ribbon now had words stitched into its lining. You let me out once. Don't do it again. She returned to the journal. The final entry hadn't been there before. It was wet with ink, still drying, but it was in her voice. The loop ends when the version that remembers tells the version that forgot what must never be known again. Don't seal it. Don't destroy it. Just tell her the truth. Anna looked around. The hallway was gone. In its place, mirrors. Each one held a different version of her. Sleeping, crying, hiding. One stared directly at her, pressing a hand to the glass. Her lips moved silently. You have to tell me now, and Anna whispered. I remember you. Anna pressed her palm to the glass, touching the reflection of herself that had asked to be remembered. For a moment, nothing happened. Then her fingers passed through. She gasped, not in fear, but in release. The mirror rippled like water. She stepped forward and entered the loop one last time. She was back in the hallway, age seven, dressed in pajamas, the cellar door ahead of her, slightly ajar. Her grandmother was nowhere in sight, but someone was whispering her name from below. Anna. She turned to run and saw her older self watching from the mirror. Time folded. The younger Anna stared up. Are you me? Yes. Do I go down again? No. But he said if I don't, you'll never come back. Anna knelt, took her younger self's hands in her own. You're not supposed to carry him. That's not your job. The child's eyes shimmered. Then who will? Anna smiled. I will, just once more. But you get to wake up tomorrow. The child nodded, slowly, then faded, not erased, but released. The hallway brightened, the cellar door shut. Anna awoke in her bed. Morning sun filtered through clean curtains. The hallway smelled of wood polish and lemon oil. No scratches, no whispers. She stood and opened the window. Birdsong. She walked to the mirror. Her reflection smiled, tired, but whole. The journal on her dresser was blank. She opened it to the last page, wrote only one sentence. The loop is closed, and beneath that, in a different hand, already waiting. For now. Chapter 6. The Watcher. It began again with a flicker. Anna stood in the kitchen, pouring water into a glass, when the overhead light blinked, once, twice, then returned. Harmless. Except her shadow remained even after the bulb steadied. It stretched against the wall in the wrong direction. She turned slowly. Nothing. But the feeling was back. Not fear. Not quite. Just awareness. Like being watched through a keyhole she didn't know existed. The hallway was darker than it should have been. The house no longer hummed, it listened. And somewhere in the space between walls, she felt it blink. She sat in the old reading room, flipping through her grandmother's Bible. It was not a book of faith anymore, just a hollowed shell that once held secrets. A scrap of paper fluttered from between the pages. It read, "He never needed to speak. He only had to see." No signature. but beneath the line, drawn in shaky pencil, was a single symbol, an eye with no pupil, just a ring, open at the top. Anna folded the paper and tucked it into her pocket. As she rose, the room creaked. She turned toward the hallway and saw him, tall, cloaked, unmoving, his face hidden in shadow. But she felt the gaze, a pulling sensation as though her spine remembered something her brain refused to recall. He didn't advance, but he didn't blink either, and Anna couldn't move. The watcher didn't move. But something in the hallway did. The air around him shimmered, like heat rising from asphalt. The shadows on the walls began to twitch, not his, not hers, just shapes that shouldn't have existed. Anna's breath caught in her throat. She blinked, and the figure vanished. The hallway was empty. Only her shadow remained, but it still faced the wrong way. She went to the attic. It had always been the quietest place, where whispers echoed least, where mirrors reflected true. But today, even the dust felt wrong, thicker, charged. She found a box she hadn't seen before, unmarked, old, inside, photographs, dozens of them. Each one featured a different person standing in this house, different decades, different clothes, different lives, but all shared one thing in common. In every photo, in the background, in a window, in a mirror, in a corner. The watcher stood, sometimes tall, sometimes thin, always cloaked, always eyeless. He'd been in this house longer than the walls. She flipped a photo over. One name written in faded ink, Margot Elswin, 1932 M.E. Another, Edith Bishop, 1959, her grandmother. Another, Anna Bishop, 1998. She stared at that last one. She was just a child in it, laughing. But behind her, the shadow, closer than in any other photo. A hand barely visible near her shoulder. She hadn't seen him then, but he had seen her. She looked up from the box. And he was standing at the end of the attic, watching. This time she didn't blink. She stood and walked toward him. Step by step, Anna moved forward. The attic grew colder. Each floorboard moaned under her feet, but the watcher never flinched. He didn't breathe. He didn't sway. He just waited. When she was 3 feet away, she stopped. "You've been here all along," she said quietly. The watcher didn't speak. "Were you here when I was born?" Silence. "Before the cellar? Before the voice?" Still no reply. But a wind stirred through the attic. Pages of old books flapped open. The air carried a scent she hadn't smelled since childhood, iron, chalk, and smoke. She reached toward the cloak. He didn't resist. Slowly, carefully, she pulled back the hood. There was no face, only a mirror. Round and silvered, the glass where a face should be reflected not her present, but her past. Her, kneeling in the hallway at age 9. Crying, blood on her hands, whispering something into the floorboards. The watcher wasn't watching. He was the watching. He was the house's memory made flesh, a vessel for everything unspoken, unseen, unremembered. He showed her another image, a woman she didn't know, but felt like she had known forever. Margot Elswin, standing before the cellar, whispering the same words Anna had once said. "If I remember it, it becomes real." The watcher turned, mirror tilting, the attic twisted, walls bending, books melting to ash, clocks spinning backward. Anna stumbled. Then everything went still. The mirror now reflected Anna, but not as she was. She was older, weathered, eyes darker, lips thin, standing in the same spot she stood now, watching someone else. The watcher was showing her what she would become. "I don't want this," she whispered. The watcher tilted his head, and for the first time, nodded. The mirror that was the watcher's face began to ripple. Anna stepped back, but not out of fear. She finally understood. The watcher didn't follow. He didn't hunt. He didn't harm. He witnessed. Every child that spoke to the cellar, every forgotten memory, every loop, every scream, every silence that wrapped itself in years. He held them. She reached out again and touched the glass where his face should have been. Her reflection blinked, but she hadn't. "Is this what happens if I stay?" she asked. The attic didn't answer. The watcher didn't move. But the house shifted. A new door appeared, one she hadn't seen before, carved into the back wall beneath the eaves. No knob, just a faint pulse of light from its cracks, like something behind it was breathing. She looked back at the watcher, his head tilted toward the door. Permission, or a warning. She crossed the attic, pressed her palm against the wood, and felt warmth, the first warmth she'd felt since her return. Then she opened it. The room inside wasn't a room. It was a place between time. The walls were made of memories, flickering, translucent scenes from every version of her life. She saw herself as a child again, a teen, an old woman in a house with no name, a stranger holding a newborn, a grandmother whispering into a keyhole. Each memory played and rewound, all touched by one constant figure, the Watcher. He had seen them all, and now, so had she.
"You were never the enemy," she whispered. "You were the archive."
Her voice echoed back.
"Then be the next."
When Anna stepped back into the attic, the Watcher was gone. In his place, a cloak hung gently on a rusted hook. A mirror sat beneath it, quiet and still. She walked to the mirror, touched its edge, and smiled. It no longer showed her future. It reflected her as she was, whole, afraid, but no longer blind. She didn't don the cloak. She didn't break the mirror. She left them both behind and walked down the attic stairs into a house that had always been watching, but now was ready to be seen. Chapter 7. Night of Knocks. The house had been quiet for 6 nights. Anna marked each one on the wall beside her bed, small vertical lines like a prisoner tracking time. No voices, no mirrors shifting, no watcher in the corner of her eye. But on the 7th night, she woke at exactly 3:17 a.m. Not from a sound, from absence. The world felt paused, as if the clocks had stopped ticking, not broken, just listening. Then came the knock. 1, 2, 3. Each knock soft, deliberate, made with the back of fingers rather than the front, as if polite. She sat up, threw on her robe, walked barefoot down the stairs. The hallway was still, only the front door stood out, lit from beneath by moonlight, and from the other side, just barely visible through the space between floor and threshold. A hand, pale, still, waiting. She didn't scream, she didn't run. She crouched down and whispered, "Why now?" No reply. Then came the 4th knock. This one echoed, not through the wood, but through her chest. She reached forward, placed her fingers against the door's cool surface, and felt warmth on the other side. Not cold, not evil, alive. The hand didn't move, it simply waited. And Anna finally whispered, "You've come to remember." The knock came at 3:17 a.m. Not from the cellar, not from the walls, from the front door. Anna was already awake. She had been standing in the hallway, candle in hand, long before the first sound arrived. The house had changed again, not visually, not physically, but in breath. It inhaled differently now, deeper, slower, as though something had settled in or something had come home. The knock came again. 4 distinct raps, software, deliberate. She moved toward the door. In her pocket, the iron key had grown warm again. She hadn't touched it in weeks, but now it pulsed against her leg like a second heartbeat. She placed the candle on the hallway table and stopped 1 step before the door. The 3rd knock came, then a 4th, then silence. She waited, no wind, no breath, just the sound of the floor creaking behind her, even though she hadn't moved.
"Who's there?"
she asked aloud. No answer. But the air shifted, a pressure change so slight it could only be felt in the bones. She reached for the door handle. It was cold, colder than the air outside, colder than the cellar ever had been, the kind of cold that lives in spaces between time, old cold, burial cold. She turned the handle and opened the door. No one stood on the porch, but something had. The candle flickered violently behind her. The key in her pocket pulsed once more, then cooled. On the doorstep lay a small package, wrapped in black fabric and tied with red thread. Anna bent slowly, hands trembling. She picked it up. It was heavy, familiar. She closed the door and returned to the candlelight, sat at the kitchen table, untied the thread. Inside, a recorder, and a single cassette labeled Last Knock. Her initials, a B, etched into the side. She didn't press play, not yet. She waited for the fifth knock, but it never came. Anna stared at the cassette. Its label was uneven, hand-cut. The words Last Knock were written not in pen or marker, but carved, etched by something small, sharp, deliberate. Each letter scratched deep into the plastic casing as if to keep them from being forgotten. She held the recorder in her hands. Its battery light flickered even though she hadn't turned it on yet. Something inside it already knew it was time. She pressed play. At first, static, no surprise. Then, breath, not hers. Then her own voice, not recorded in fear or haste, calm, measured, final. This is Anna Bishop. The door has opened, but this time it knocked first. That matters. Her breath hitched. She didn't remember recording this. Her voice continued. There were always rules, hidden ones. The door doesn't speak. It listens. The cellar doesn't trap. It keeps. But the knocking? Silence. That's when it asks permission. Anna paused the tape. The air was different now. Not cold. Not warm, just expectant. She resumed playback. If I hear the knock and do not answer, it waits. But if I open the door, if I accept the package, if I press play, a second voice cut in. Deeper, older, hers but distorted, like dragged through years and fog. Then it remembers everything I tried to forget. The recorder whined. A third voice entered, a whisper. Knock again. Then static, loud, piercing. Anna hit stop. The sound didn't stop. The recorder vibrated in her hand. From somewhere in the walls, the sound of knuckles rapping on wood, slow and steady, echoed four times. Then a fifth. For the first time in her life, the knock had changed. Five. Not four. Five. She stood slowly. Left the recorder on the table, walked back to the front door. This time, no one stood behind it, but she opened it anyway. Outside, on the porch, something waited. A second package, smaller, wrapped in white lace. And inside, a photograph. Of her. Tomorrow. Standing in the cellar, smiling. And the caption, printed in perfect black type. Let her in. Anna stared at the photograph in her hand. The version of her standing in the cellar looked just slightly off. The posture was wrong, too still. The smile curved too far. The eyes were hers, but empty, as if something had worn her skin too long and forgotten how to wear it properly. She turned the photo over. A date had appeared where there had been nothing before. Tonight, no year, no time. Just a warning, or an invitation. She didn't run, didn't panic. Anna walked back into the kitchen, placed the photo beside the recorder, and stared at the front door. The fifth knock echoed again. Software, final, expectant. She opened it without hesitation. No one stood there. But there was movement on the porch, slow and strange, a gliding sound as if someone had been waiting on the other side of time and finally stepped forward. Then, she saw her, Anna, not younger, not older, just wrong. The same face, same clothes, same scar on the hand from when she'd slipped in the garden as a child. But her head tilted slightly, like it didn't know how to balance. Her fingers twitched like they were remembering how to move. "I've come home," it said. Its voice was layered, hers and others, stacked like pages in a burned book. Anna didn't speak. She only stepped aside, and the other Anna entered. They sat across from one another in the parlor. The lights flickered but didn't fail. The wind picked up outside, whispering through the cracks. The house felt full, not crowded, but whole. Like two halves had finally rejoined. "I remember what you forgot," the other Anna said. "I kept it for you." "What did I forget?" The other Anna reached into her coat pocket and pulled out a child's drawing, crumpled and worn. Anna knew it before she saw it. A stick figure girl, a door, a dark hand reaching through, and at the top, written in her childhood scrawl, "Me and her." "You let me in once," the other Anna said, sliding the picture across the table. "And then you shut the door." "I was a child." "And now you're the door." Anna felt the words like pressure in her lungs, like the house itself exhaled through her ribs. She realized something. The knocking had never been to enter. It had been a reminder, a pulse, a countdown.
"So what happens if I open again?" she asked.
The other Anna smiled, not cruelly, not kindly. "Then we finally stop knocking." Anna stared at her other self across the table. The drawing lay between them, frayed and curling at the edges. Candlelight flickered over the stick figure lines. The little girl who had drawn it, who had whispered to the seller and named her own shadow, was long gone. But the echo remained.
"You came back," Anna said softly. "I never left," the other replied.
She leaned in, the mirror of Anna's face softened by candlelight.
"You were strong enough to forget me, but forgetting doesn't mean it didn't happen."
Anna felt something stir beneath her skin. Not pain. Memory, long suppressed. A closet door slamming shut, a girl screaming at night, a locked journal page, blank except for the word, "Again."
"So what do you want now?" she asked.
"Not revenge, not fear. Just to be heard." Anna's eyes watered.
"I was scared."
Her other self nodded.
"I know. I was the one who kept that fear for you."
The house creaked softly. A comfortable sound, familiar. For the first time, it felt less like walls around her and more like pages in a book she had finally learned to read.
"If I listen," Anna asked, "will you go?"
"If you listen," the other whispered, "I won't need to." They sat in silence. No more knocks, no flickering lights. Just two versions of the same soul, separated by choices too old to trace. And Anna said,
"Tell me everything."
Her other self spoke, not with words, but with memories. Of the night she first opened the cellar door, of the knock that followed, of the time she buried the doll, of the name she whispered that wasn't her own, of the loop she began, and the mirror that watched her do it. Anna listened, fully. She didn't flinch, didn't interrupt, didn't try to erase it. And when the last memory had been told, the figure across from her smiled, not wide, not wrong, but human.
"Thank you," the other Anna said,
then stood and faded. No scream, no crack in the wall, no cold, just release. Morning came. Anna woke in her bed. The photo on the nightstand had changed. Now it showed only one of her, standing at the window, facing the sun. The knocking never returned. Not because it had ended, but because at last it had been answered. Chapter 8. The Room with No Reflection. She hadn't noticed the door before. Not really. It had always been there, tucked behind a hanging coat, lost beneath the shadow of the second floor landing. Too narrow, too silent. Anna had passed it 100 times, but now it was open. She stood in the threshold, heart barely beating. The room was small, no larger than a pantry, but lined wall to wall with mirrors. Not whole mirrors, but fragments. Cracked, silvered shards arranged like mosaic tiles. They should have reflected her. They didn't. No light bounced back. No face stared from the glass. Just emptiness, polished, cold, watching emptiness. In the center of the room stood a single chair, Victorian, wooden, carved with roses and thorns. The seat faced her directly. Behind it, nothing, not even a wall, just black, like the room ended in shadow. She stepped inside, and her reflection blinked into view, but not hers. Someone else's, someone wearing her skin like it was learning how. She didn't run. The door shut softly behind her. The mirrors remained still. And in their depths, versions of her waited, some younger, some twisted, one with its eyes sewn shut, one curled in the chair, whispering secrets to the dark behind her. "What is this place?" Anna asked aloud. No one answered, but her voice didn't echo. It was absorbed. She stepped toward the chair. One reflection, a woman with burned hands, moved, not in sync, independently. She looked at Anna and said with her lips, though no sound came, "This is where you see what didn't happen." Anna reached out to the mirror, and it cracked, not from her hand, but from within. Something in the silver backing split and smiled. The chair was cold beneath her. Anna lowered herself slowly, every breath shallow, every heartbeat louder than the last. The room remained silent, yet the air felt thick, like a breath had been held here for decades, just waiting for her to exhale first. The mirrors didn't move. She did. And that was the mistake. As soon as she shifted in the chair, the mirrors rippled. Not like glass, like water, like memory. The first mirror to her left flickered. Inside it, Anna, aged 15, standing in the street outside her house. She wore a coat she never owned. She was crying, screaming for someone, for herself, not to go back inside. The next mirror showed her older, a mother, a stranger holding a child that had her eyes but not her name. The mirrors spun slowly now, each one sliding like a carousel of fates, each a variation of her, some dead, some dreaming, some happy. Only one screamed. That one faced her directly. It showed Anna, chained to the cellar floor, eyes wide with madness, still whispering into the dark. "She never left," the voice behind the mirror said. "Because you did." Anna stood suddenly. The mirror shook. The lights above buzzed. Her breath came faster now. "This isn't real," she whispered. Her reflection from childhood appeared in the far corner, age 6, clutching the iron key like a toy. That version of her smiled and mouthed, "It was real enough for me." Anna backed toward the door. It was gone. The room had no exit now, only mirrors, only memory, only things she'd never done, but once thought of. One mirror flashed, brighter than the rest. Inside it, a version of Anna that had never opened the cellar door. She was peaceful, older, married, standing by a lake, laughing. Anna stared at her, and that version stared back, genuinely happy. Then the lake behind her cracked open, and the watcher stepped out. Even in that perfect version, he had followed. The mirrors began to hum, not a sound but a vibration, low and deep, the way memory feels when it resurfaces suddenly. Each panel of broken glass shimmered as if backlit by firelight, as if waiting to ignite. In one, she watched herself step into traffic. In another, she moved away at 17 and never returned. In a third, she was already in the chair and smiling with someone else's mouth. "You have to choose," a voice whispered, not from behind her, but from within one of the mirrors. The voice came from a version of herself she didn't recognize. Her eyes were different, hungrier, tired. "Choose?" Anna asked. "Choose what?" "Which of us you'll let be real, Her knees weakened. She reached out to the mirror, but her hand passed through. No resistance, no ripple, just merging. The reflection held her hand, her own fingers, but colder, tighter. The moment they touched, Anna saw a flicker of everything that version had done. A marriage that ended before it began, a child left on a doorstep. Three cellars in three different homes, each with a door that opened itself. She pulled back. The glass hissed like breath against a flame. "You don't get to choose not to choose," another version of herself said, a sharper one, standing confidently in a cracked frame, wearing a version of her grandmother's ring. "Why now?" Anna whispered. "Why me?" "Because you opened the last door," the version said in unison. "Because you heard the fifth knock." Anna backed toward the chair. It was the only thing not moving now. "I want to stay myself," she said aloud. Silence. Then laughter, soft and knowing. A younger version of her, no more than 10, stepped into a mirror and replied, "Then you should have stayed out of this room." Every mirror brightened. Every version stepped forward. They were all Anna, and none of them wanted to disappear. The room closed in, not physically, but in presence. The mirrors didn't move, but Anna felt them tighten around her like breath in a shrinking chest. Each version of her stepped forward, lips moving with silent memories, each one desperate to be seen again. "You must choose," the room repeated, but now the voice wasn't hers. It was older, familiar, her grandmother's. "If you don't choose," the voice warned, "you become them all." Anna fell to her knees. Not in surrender, in stillness. She closed her eyes and let the mirrors speak. She saw herself lost in a hospital at 22, whispering into a radio with no battery. She saw herself never leaving Bramble Hollow, always waiting for someone else to knock first. She saw a version who had never opened the cellar door, and yet had found the watcher anyway, years later, reflected in a subway window in a city far away. Each life was real. Each life was hers. Each one aching for the chance to be the one that remained. Anna took a breath. The mirrors held it for her. Then she opened her eyes and stood. "I won't choose," she said. The room trembled. "I don't have to choose." The mirrors cracked, not from pressure, but from release. "I am all of them," she whispered. "And none of them are alone anymore." Every reflection smiled, for the first time in unison. Then one by one, they faded. The glass darkened. The walls calmed. The hum stopped. Anna stood alone in a room with no reflection, and this time, it was because she needed none. The chair turned itself around. The door reopened. She stepped through, and the room, that impossible, watching, remembering room, vanished behind her like it had never been built. She returned to the hallway and glanced at the mirror above the old dresser. This time, her reflection looked back. Just one version. No smile, no fear, just her. The version that had remembered them all. Chapter 9. The Candle That Wouldn't. Burnout. Anna first noticed it when she stepped into her grandmother's sewing room, a place sealed since the funeral, left untouched out of respect or fear. The air was stale but undisturbed. Dust lay across every surface like frost. Spools of thread, faded ribbons, pins rusted into cushions, all paused in time. But on the windowsill, a single candle burned. No wind touched it, no wax dripped, no smoke rose. It simply burned. She stepped closer, heart slow and heavy. The candle wasn't scented. The wick didn't blacken. The wax remained tall, untouched. She stared for a full minute and the flame never flickered. It should have gone out years ago. Yet it still glowed, still waited. At its base was a scrap of cloth, yellowed with age, stitched in thread the color of dried blood. A single phrase. Do not light what already remembers. But Anna hadn't lit it. No one had. So why was it burning? And what did it remember? That night, Anna carried the candle to the parlor and set it on the mantel. She stared at it through the quiet. The flame gave off little light, but it filled the room with presence. The kind of presence that settles just behind your ears, the way old prayers do. She tried to blow it out. Nothing. She covered it with a jar. The flame remained. She placed it in the cellar. Still, it burned. Finally, she set it beside her bed and asked aloud, "What are you waiting for?" The flame pulsed once, as if it had heard her. Anna dreamed of a room without corners. The candle sat at its center, tall and still. All the walls curved inward like a softened shell, seamless, featureless, silver white. The only color came from the flame, orange and gold, casting no shadow. In the dream, she couldn't move, only watch. Figures emerged from the light, women she knew but didn't recognize. One wore her mother's blouse, another had her grandmother's braid, a third had Anna's hands but none of her hesitation. They circled the candle in silence and whispered in unison. She lit it, she fed it, she forgot it. Then they turned to her. "You are the last one who sees it," one of them said. "Don't look away again." She woke at 3:17 a.m. The candle still burned on her nightstand. Its wax had not moved. Its flame leaned slightly toward her, as if watching her breathe. She reached out and touched the wax. It wasn't hot, but it wasn't cold either. It was listening. In the morning, she searched the attic for any trace of the candle's origin. She found a small box behind her grandmother's sewing chest. Inside, a collection of tiny scraps, dried flowers, a locket, and a page torn from a book she didn't recognize. On the page, in careful, curled script, "The flame that endures is not eternal. It is inherited. To extinguish it is to forget. To feed it is to remember. But to watch it is to be chosen." Anna placed the page beside the candle. The flame flared once, blew at its center, then steadied. "What do you want from me?" she whispered. This time, the flame leaned toward the door, and a sound followed, a soft knock, not from the front door, from the wall, from inside the house. The knock came again, from behind the bookshelf in the upstairs hall. Anna carried the candle with her, shielding the flame with one hand. It never wavered, even as she passed drafts and doorways. The knock grew louder, not urgent, not angry, just steady, like someone keeping time. She pulled the shelf aside. Behind it, a narrow seam in the wallpaper. A hidden door, warped and splintered, sealed with a rusted latch. She hadn't known it was there. She unhooked the latch. The door creaked open. Stale air billowed out. Not mold, not decay, just age. Time trapped in boards. And in the center of the room beyond, a stone pedestal. On it sat another candle, identical to hers, but this one was cold. She stepped inside. The walls were covered in soot, not from fire, but smoke long since gone. Burn marks trailed the ceiling where flames had once danced uncontrolled. Anna's candle flared as she crossed the threshold. The cold candle flickered, without spark, without match. Then it caught flame. She gasped and dropped to her knees. Two flames burned now, twins, separated for decades, remembering each other. And Anna felt something behind her shift. A chair. No, a cradle. Rocking gently, though no one touched it. She turned. In the cradle lay a bundle, wrapped in old lace, a name stitched into the edge. Elswen. The first keeper. The flame leaned toward it, and the cradle stopped rocking. Anna lifted the bundle with trembling hands. It held no weight, only warmth, only memory. Her candle leaned forward, reaching, not to burn, to rejoin. She set it beside the second. The flames twisted, curled, and folded into each other. One fire, no longer divided, The cradle turned to ash, the room warmed, and the knock behind the wall stopped. Anna sat beside the joined flame, finally understanding. The candle didn't burn for her. It burned through her. Anna sat beside the twin flame until dawn. The room that had once hidden the cradle was no longer cold. The soot on the walls had flaked away, revealing faded wallpaper beneath, roses and moths, in a pattern she remembered from childhood dreams. The two flames danced in perfect rhythm now, but the wax from neither candle melted. The air shimmered around them, not hot, but weighted, as if the room were holding its breath with her. On the pedestal, a scrap of paper had appeared. Anna hadn't seen it before, but the moment she looked at it, her heart sank. It was her grandmother's handwriting. "When the candles join, so do their memories. One cannot hold both. Either pass the flame or blow it out, but choose before the house does it for you." Anna touched the base of the pedestal. It was warm, soft somehow, like touching a page just turned. She stood, looked down at the flame. It burned steady, waiting, not for survival, for direction. She could carry it. She could keep it. It would never extinguish in her hand, but it would change her, bend her inward, as it had the others. Or she could end it, and with it, the memory, the knock, the mirror, the voice. She stepped forward, took a deep breath, and blew. The flame didn't flicker, but the house did. Its bones moaned, its walls shifted. The flame flared once, then went dark. Both candles sat extinguished. But Anna's chest felt full of light. She gathered the ashes of the cradle, placed them in a linen pouch, tied it shut with red thread, the same kind used to bind the first warning at the window. Then she left the room, closed the hidden door, and sealed it shut with her grandmother's sewing kit, a single stitch across the latch. Outside, the hallway seemed brighter. The mirror at the end finally showed her reflection. Just one, still, present. The flame was gone, and she had chosen not to keep it. But she hadn't forgotten it either. She never would. Chapter 10. Her name was Anna. The suitcase was light. Anna hadn't packed much, just a few clothes, some books, the iron key, and the pouch of ashes. She didn't look back as she zipped the bag. The house watched her without protest. It had changed since she made her choice. No more cold spots. No more flickering lights, no voices, no knocks. The silence felt respectful, like a breath being held in reverence, not fear. She walked through the rooms one last time. The mirror in the front hall no longer whispered. The cellar door didn't tremble. The recorder remained empty, and the candle had stayed dark. But on the front porch, tucked behind the planter box, a letter waited. Her name scrawled across the front, Anna. Only that. No return address, no stamp. Inside, in her grandmother's handwriting, "If you are reading this, then the house has finished its story. You are not the end. You are the first who remembered what others buried. Take your name with you. Leave nothing else behind." Anna folded the letter and placed it in her coat pocket. She stepped outside. The wind was still. The sky, pale with early light. And for the first time in years, perhaps the first time in her life, she felt like a woman with no shadows following her. Only memories walking beside her, calmly, respectfully. Her name was Anna, and she remembered everything. The town hadn't changed. The bookstore still had the crooked awning. The diner still served coffee too bitter, and bread too soft. The same dog barked behind the same chain-link fence 2 blocks down from the cemetery gate. But something was different in the way people looked at her. Not suspicion, not curiosity, recognition. A child stared too long at her shadow. An old woman nodded slowly as Anna passed. The postman tipped his cap and whispered, "She came back whole." Anna paused. "Do I know you?" He smiled. Number. But the house did. Then he walked on. She stopped in front of the library. The windows were still lined with outdated posters, but in the corner of the glass, a yellowed newspaper clipping had been taped up, long forgotten and curling at the edges. The headline, "Bishop Family, the House That Listened." There was a photo of her grandmother, young, unsure, holding a child wrapped in a dark shawl. The caption beneath read, "The last daughter to inherit the key." Behind the photo, through the glass, her reflection stared back. Just one version, older now, stronger. She stepped away from the library and followed the sidewalk around the block. At the corner stood a mural. She hadn't seen it before. New paint, bright and strange. It depicted a woman in a dark hallway, holding a candle. She looked like Anna. In the corner of the mural, someone had signed it. Her name was Anna. No last name, no explanation, just memory, left in color. Anna smiled for the first time in what felt like years. She kept walking, and the wind behind her did not follow. It walked with her. The cemetery sat just beyond the edge of town, where the trees leaned low and the earth always smelled faintly of sage and salt. Anna walked its rows slowly. Names whispered from every stone, some familiar, others lost to time. But she didn't have to look long. She knew exactly where to go. Her grandmother's grave stood beneath a willow tree, its branches draped like old curtains. The headstone was simple. Granite. Worn smooth at the edges. Edith Bishop, 1927, 1995. She remembered. Anna knelt, brushing leaves away from the base. A sprig of lavender had grown beside it. Wild, untended, perfect. She smiled. "You kept it alive." In her coat pocket, the pouch of ashes warmed faintly. Not hot, just aware. She opened it, scattering the dust gently into the soil beside the roots. As she did, a breeze stirred the willow's lowest branches. They didn't move side to side. They bowed. Anna pressed a hand to the stone, not for comfort, for connection. "I remembered too," she whispered. Behind the headstone, something rustled. Not animal, not wind. She rose and stepped around the back of the grave. A journal lay tucked between the roots, wrapped in oilcloth, sealed with twine. She lifted it carefully, unwrapped it, opened to the first page. Inside, a note. "If you found this, you've already written it. Tell her story now. She won't write again." No signature, but she knew who had left it. The pages were blank, waiting, ready. Anna smiled and began to write. Her name was Anna. Anna sat beneath the willow tree for hours writing. The words came easily, not forced, not hunted. They didn't feel like invention. They felt like release, like memories putting themselves to paper, one by one, finally tired of hiding. She wrote about the cellar, the candle, the knock, the loop, the watcher. But most of all, she wrote about her. The girl who forgot, and the woman who chose to remember. As the sun dipped low, Anna reached the final page of the journal. It was heavier than the others. The paper felt denser, older, as if it had been waiting the longest. She paused, then wrote, "I am the last keeper, not of flame, not of house, but of name. My name was Anna, it still is, and that is enough." The ink soaked in slowly, darker than it should have been. When she blinked, the words seemed to shift, not change, but hum, a quiet echo between the lines. She closed the journal, tied it shut with the same twine, and placed it beneath the stone, not to bury it, to root it. Stories, after all, do not rest. They grow. That night, Anna didn't return to the house. She left it standing, empty, still, finally free of watchers, because there was no one left to be watched. The wind didn't howl. The mirrors didn't speak. The cellar stayed closed. And for the first time, the house didn't ask for her to stay. It let her go. She walked into the morning with no map, only the journal in her bag, and her name, full and her own. When strangers asked, she would tell them, "My name is Anna." But she would never again explain where she came from. She didn't have to. The house would remember. She had made sure of that.